Well, this year at the feast, I've noticed for the first time some farm fields in the local area. These farm fields appear to be prepared by people who have a degree in engineering. I don't know if you've looked at them as I have. These are agricultural fields. It is very apparent that they're growing food that they send out to the rest of the country. As we know, a lot of produce is grown in this area, and the rest of the country is the benefactor of what is grown here, receiving whatever you see in the dirt, eventually making its way to the shelves on the grocery stores. So, obviously, being very big business, I'm sure that there are some mathematical equations and very careful engineering that's involved in determining precisely how wide the rows in these fields need to be. All of these fields that you and I see right now out here, they have this perfectly smooth, perfectly straight rows for hundreds of yards. When we were on the tour bus the other day, I was sitting, and I, of course, was sitting on the side, and I could get a view at some of these fields, and it was amazing how straight they were. I could see from one end to the other. It's clear that they were created with some very specialized equipment. The rows are more than straight. They are sculpted into these slabs of soil that are then wrapped in plastic, of all things. I'm sure that they must then, of course, poke holes in the plastic and plant seeds there where the food will grow, with the plastic, of course, preventing the weeds from gaining root and growing, and also keeping the moisture from escaping. Truly, I've never really paid attention to the way that they do this, but it's truly marvelous to behold the amazing work and the perfection of these fields. Now, these fields here in California are far different than they look like back in Wisconsin, where I'm from. Back there, you'd be hard-pressed to see a field that's flat and smooth. My father and his family were dairy farmers, and he tells a story about how his older brother would plow the fields, and he would get some variation in the line, and it would not be straight, and his brother would continue to follow that same curve, and the lines were never straight when his brother plowed the fields. And of course, in Wisconsin, the winters cause the ground to frost several feet deep, and that effect pushes field stones up from the ground up to the surface, which, of course, these field stones were deposited by the glaciers that moved through that part of the country. And as more and more years go by, the field stones continually just pop up on the surface year after year. It's common there in that area and other cool climates to find piles of field stones where farmers place all of the cleared rock. In England, for example, and some countries in the UK where they've been having farm fields there for many, many hundreds of years, much longer than they have here, they even make fences out of these field stones. Now, when beginning to work on a new field that hasn't been prepared by previous generations or hasn't had the marvel of, you know, modern engineering to make these perfectly smooth, crafted, sculpted fields, the task of clearing field stones can be a very arduous one. Field stones are everywhere. It's just something you have to deal with. And I'm sure to the people in the business of agriculture, finding a field that's perfectly manicured without a stone in that field to be found, it's a wonderful thing. You could imagine if you have work to do, you got to get your plants in the ground, you don't want to spend your time wasting your time clearing fields of stones. It's hard work, takes time, takes effort. to use that land that's perfectly prepared, perfectly smooth, clear of stones. It doesn't require the planning or the effort that a stony field does. If you put yourself in the shoes of a farmer, you can imagine the burden being lifted when seeing that you have a very clear field to work with. It turns out that there is a Greek word that describes what I'm talking about perfectly. That Greek word is aphalotis. Okay? Aphalotis. The literal translation means without rocks, of course, being applied to a field that is clear of stones. Figuratively speaking, it means simplicity. And it's used in only one place in the Bible. I will go there in a moment. I want to give you the title of my sermonette today, which is Simplicity of Heart. I want to take the time today to think about this principle, this idea of having a simplicity of heart. Let's go ahead and turn to that one place where this word appears in Acts 2, verses 40 through 47. That's Acts 2, beginning in verse 40. This describes the folks that are part of that first church who've been baptized. Verse 40, and with many other words he testified and exhorted them, saying, be saved from this perverse generation. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized. And that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and prayers. Then fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done through the apostles. Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and divided them among all, as anyone had need. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved. Somehow these people in the first church managed to remove the clutter from their hearts, from their lives. Their hearts were clear of those figurative field stones. They lived simply. They didn't have many needs beyond what they had in their lives as they were coming to their conversion. And what were they concerned with? Well, it wasn't the world. They weren't concerned with the things of the world. They were trying to be saved from that perverse generation. They were concerned with the truth and what they were learning. They were concerned with their hope for the future. That is the one thing that kept them going. With simplicity of heart, with that one driving desire in their lives, they were glad. They didn't need much more. They had their needs taken care of. They were receptive to the message about becoming disentangled with the complicated things in the world. Not only did they take that to heart, they made changes in their lives to live by those principles. They shed their baggage from the world. And doing that helped them to focus. Helped them to focus on the things that really mattered and not get distracted. There might be moments, I hope, in our lives where we have experienced that same kind of perfect clarity in our lives, where we don't have a desire in the world, where we have everything that we need, and all of that is provided by God. It's a wonderful feeling when that happens. I have experienced it myself. I wish I could say that it's something that I experience more frequently than I do, but when I do feel that simplicity of heart, it's something I want to take the time and hang on to, because I know that that is what is important to me and what will bring me the most satisfaction in my life. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 9, and I'd like to read verses 3 through 5. This describes the moment when God is giving Solomon instruction as he's preparing the temple. 1 Kings 9 and verse 3 is where we'll begin. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built to put my name there forever. And my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. Now if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever. As I promised David your father, saying, you shall not fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. Here this word integrity, integrity of heart, that word is tam. And that, of course, is Hebrew. It's not the same word that we looked at before. But the meaning is very similar to what we talked about earlier. It means completeness, innocence, and it's also translated as simplicity. The way that David approached his life is used as an example here as God is talking to Solomon. David's relationship with God was with that oneness of heart, that innocence of heart, that simplicity of heart. He wanted to serve God with all his might, and he continually, when he got off track, he came back to the one thing that guided and directed him. He loved God so much that that's all that mattered to him. With his whole heart, he loved God. He was not double-minded. He wasn't concerned with things of the world. He was willing to give them up. When he found himself veering off track again, he realized his mistake. He repented. And we have many hymns where he reflects on those moments. If our heart's desires to make material gain, or if our heart feels entitled to something greater in this world, then our hearts are misguided. Something we can set a tripwire for in our lives is thinking about those moments where we're unsatisfied with what we have. Are our hearts simple, or are we finding field stones in our heart? We set ourselves up for frustration when we make our lives more complicated, when we think we need more than we actually do. When we try to mix the pursuit of worldly gain with godliness, we can't do that. That is where we find the field stones in our heart. Let's go to Colossians 3, and I'll read verses 22 through 24. Colossians 3, beginning in verse 22. Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. The sincerity of heart, again, is a different Greek word, but this too can be translated as singleness of heart. It expresses a simplicity without self-seeking. That is what it is properly applied. This is the genuineness of heart. When we put our hand to do some work, we do so as though we are working for Jesus Christ himself. And I tell you what, I love this task that I have here, these assignments, It takes work to get up here and speak, no doubt. But I know that this is an important job to do. I am working for Christ. It's a wonderful thing to do. And everything, as we read here, that we put our hand to do, we can think about in that way. We don't need to be worried about controlling the outcome of our work. There's no way we can do that. But simply being satisfied with doing our best, that is how we can function. Because when our hearts are in the right place, serving God with everything that we do, with sincerity, with simplicity, and innocence, integrity, it's enough. It is enough. It's enough. The singleness of heart expressed here means that we are always acting with our work serving God. That perspective keeps things very simple, like perfectly simple. We show up, we try our hardest in everything we do. I've been doing a lot of speaking about the heart lately. I haven't really intended to do it, but the topic of having a good, pure heart dedicated to God is something that I've been contemplating a lot. The reason has a lot to do with making sure that we all have a good answer to the why questions. Why am I here keeping the feast? Why are you here keeping the feast? Why am I choosing this way of life? Is it for the right reasons? Why am I working to obtain this or that, or find a new home, or find a new car, whatever? Why am I putting effort forth in maybe the endeavors of my hobbies? It's important to have the right answers to those questions. But when we dig deep enough, the answers to those why questions, they expose what's really in our hearts. Is it simple? Do we have those field stones that need to be cleared? It's normal for us as human beings to have stones scattered throughout the field of our heart. Those things that distract us and threaten to throw us off course, making our life unnecessarily more difficult. But we shouldn't let that state of being remain. Working towards developing a simplicity of heart is the best way to clear out those distractions that complicate our lives. Solomon wrote the conclusion of the whole matter in Ecclesiastes. He wrote, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for that is man's all." It doesn't get much simpler than that.